and then it was just one thing after the next. And even though I was constantly battling to try to figure a way out of it all, it was like I got sucked further and further into that world until I realized I actually... I breathe in slowly and push my hand through my hair as I think again of the changeling spell and the moment in Zed's home where I discovered exactly who I am and who my family are. I can't help the small smile lifting one side of my lips. I realized I actually belong there. Val's smile is wider than mine. It's weird how you ended up with your own family and you didn't even know it at first, but I guess, like you said, if they search for people who have special magic, and you're one of those people, then the chances were always good that they'd find you. Yeah. My smile slips away as I try not to imagine the horrors Vi and Rin might be going through right now. You found your family, Em, Val says, wrapping her hand around my arm and squeezing. That's incredible. And I know you're worried about the situation your parents are in right now, but they sound like they're super kick-ass. I'm sure they'll be just fine. I nod and clear my throat. So, how's everything been here? How's your family? She rolls her eyes. Are you kidding? You want to talk about my boring family that hasn't changed since you left? Tell me about your family. I laugh and stop hugging the pillow so tightly. Placing it on my lap, I say, okay, well, the woman who was with me outside Bloomberry is my aunt. She's the one who first figured out who I am. She's beautiful, Val says. I was going to ask if she's wearing contact lenses made of actual gold, but I assume that's just the way she is? Yes, and the gold bits in her hair are natural, too. Anyway, while I've been traveling around with her, she's been telling me about everyone else in my family. I mean, we've been doing a lot of other stuff, like learning self-defense and combat magic, but at night, before one of us falls asleep and the other stays awake to keep watch, she tells me all about them. I swear, it's almost like a soap opera, Val. Her curls bounce as she leans to the side and laughs. And when she says, okay, now you have to tell me more, it almost feels, for a moment, as if this evening is the same as any other evening, sitting on her bed, chatting about anything and everything. So, three of my four grandparents are still alive, I tell her, deciding to give in to the nostalgia and pretend everything's normal for just another few minutes, which is apparently quite something, considering they were all guardians. Vi's mother died when Vi was very young, and then her father died when she was a teenager, although he didn't actually die. It was all part of a major undercover operation he was working on for the Queen. The Queen? I know, right? It was this elaborate cover-up because faking his death would ensure his daughter's safety. Rin's parents divorced after Rin's older brother died. His father remarried and had Kala, so she's like my half-aunt. And then some years after that, Rin's mother and Vi's dad, who'd been friends for years, ended up having a brief relationship after Vi and Rin got together. What? Oh my gosh, super awkward. Yeah, it must have been. I agree with a laugh. I can't wait to ask them more about it. Oh, and this was all after Vi and Rin spent years hating each other because Rin blamed Vi for his brother's death. Val shakes her head. You're right, definitely soap opera worthy. And the part about Dash, I mean, who would ever have guessed he was actually from another world? And then you kissed him. I roll my eyes. Yep, that was definitely one of the nicer things that's happened in recent weeks. The laugh I hear then is the silly, girly, giggly type I never thought would leave my own lips. I clear my throat and continue quickly. I'm not really sure how I feel about him, aside from, like, really missing having him around all the time, but now doesn't feel like the most appropriate time to be figuring out romantic entanglements. I take in a deep breath and let it out slowly. So anyway, it's a bit strange wrapping my head around all of this, and at the back of my mind, I can't stop thinking about Ada and Danny. This woman I always thought was my mother, and now doesn't even look like my mother, and how maybe I killed her. Them? How do you even refer to someone like that? I don't know. I just feel super guilty every time I think of her. I press one fist into the pillow on my lap. Then I have to remind myself that she wanted to kill me, but that doesn't really make me feel any better. She wanted to kill you? Yes. I think I became too much of a pain in the ass and more trouble than I was worth. I'm pressing both fists into the pillow now. And Prince Rourke wanted to use us both as a weapon, and she didn't want to compete to be the favorite, something like that. The words every child wants to hear their own mother say. She isn't really... I know. And it would have been Ada who said that, right? Not Daniela. Yeah, I know. I relax my shoulders and stop squashing the pillow. Still, it sucks when the evil half of your ex-mother wants to kill you. But you can fight her off now, right? Val asks. You're carrying all these weapons around with you, and you said you know something about self-defense and... combat magic? Is that what you called it? Yes, but I doubt I could actually fight her off. I'd have to use my griffin ability and say exactly the right thing before her glass gets me. That is, if she's still alive. Val looks down at her hands, twisting together in her lap, and mutters several expletives. I consider telling her about Dash's creative alternatives to curse words, but that doesn't seem important right now. So, instead, I simply say... yeah, exactly. She looks up at me. We should go for a walk. You know what? I was actually about to suggest the same thing. I push against the edge of the bed and stand. There's something I need to do. I want to go to the cemetery. It sounds odd saying it out loud. I assume Chelsea and Georgia are buried there. I remember Chelsea saying she didn't want to be cremated when she died because the idea of her body burning freaked her out. Yes, they were both buried, Val says as she climbs off the bed. So, I know it probably sounds stupid, seeing as how I didn't really love them and they didn't really love me. And now it turns out they're not even my real family, but I feel like I need to say goodbye. That doesn't sound stupid at all. Okay, good. Val's gaze moves to the window. It looks like it might start raining again soon. We should go now. I look past her and take in the heavy clouds darkening the sky outside her window. I shrug. Getting soaked is pretty low on my list of problems these days. She points at her head. You know what happens to this frizz in the rain, don't you? I smile. The frizz gets frizzier. We should definitely get moving before the rain comes back. Val opens her wardrobe doors and grabs a jacket with a hood. I should have been wearing this earlier. This frizz is already getting out of control. As she pulls the jacket on, I say, So, don't be surprised when we're walking downstairs and I suddenly go invisible. It's this type of magic, a glamour, that hides me from humans. I just don't want your brothers and sisters or your mom to see me. It's easier than having to explain everything to them. Val's expression suggests she's on the verge of being freaked out, but, to her credit, she does her best to shrug it off. Sure, that doesn't sound weird at all. I'll see you outside then? I nod, and she goes downstairs ahead of me. I follow her a few moments later, pausing when I reach the living room to make sure no one's noticed me. I'm about to walk quickly across the room when I see Calla standing on the other side, also entirely unnoticed by Val's siblings, one of whom is playing a game on a phone, while the other two hover over her, watching. "Em," Calla says quietly, "come here. Have you seen this?" She nods to the TV, where running soldiers and flashes of gunfire light up the screen while a breaking news banner scrolls across the bottom. My first thought is that I've never seen anyone in Val's house watching the news. Calla must have changed channels without anyone noticing. My second thought is that the blood-spattered person currently being wrestled to the ground on screen looks distinctly inhuman. What's going on? I ask. There's no TV upstairs. I haven't seen any of this. I don't know how, but a group of human soldiers has discovered one of the natural openings into the Fey realm. This channel's just reported on the first expedition into the other world, as they're currently calling it. They've got guns and other horrible weapons, and I saw several Fey bodies. Dead. And this reporter is using words like experimentation and aliens. It's just horrifying. Crap, I breathe. Stupid freaking Rourke. These people would never have come looking for our world if not for him. He's going to end up starting a war between our worlds. I've never wanted to kill. Calla says between her teeth, justice without death has always been important to me. But right now? She shuts her eyes and exhales sharply. Right now I could kill Rourke if no one was there to stop me. I press my lips together as the camera catches a glimpse of trees with rainbow leaves and softly pulsing dots of light hovering in the air just beyond the ordinary green and brown trees of this world. Then an explosion obliterates our view of the rainbow side of the image as the camera shutters and the reporter babbles on. Unexpected anger flashes hotly through my body. That's my home now. That's my world. And it's being destroyed. I need to get the mirror out and talk to Chase, Calla says, looking down at her backpack, sitting in the corner of the room. We obviously don't want to get in the way of whatever the Guild's planning to do, but I feel like we need to help somehow. At the very least, I want to know what the Guild's doing about this. I shove my anger deep down and say, I was planning to go to the cemetery with Thal. To say goodbye to Chelsea and Georgia. I know it isn't important in comparison to what's going on in the magical world, but, Em, of course that's important. Calla shakes her head. I'm sorry, I've been so consumed with what's happening out there, in this world and the Fey world, that I didn't even think about Chelsea and Georgia. But of course you'd want to go to their graves. She bends and lifts her backpack. I'll go with you. I can contact Chase once we're at the cemetery. We cross the living room, and though I tell myself not to look, I can't help one last glance back at the news. My stomach twists at the sight of a blue-green scaled hand sticking out from beneath a sheet covering a motionless body. I can't believe they're showing things like that on TV. I growl as we leave. That's the kind of horrible behind-the-scenes footage that the government usually tries to keep hidden from the public. I think it's impossible to hide anything to do with the discovery of the other world, Calla says, curling her fingers into air quotes for those last two words. I'm sure almost every reporter in the world is looking for a story related to it. Not just reporters, I mutter. There must be tons of amateur footage spreading across the internet every second. Yes, meaning it's less and less likely that we'll be able to make the world forget what's happened. She mutters grimly. Hey, there you are, Val says when we reach the pavement outside her house. I told my mom I need to go get some study notes from Sherry, since my education is more important than me helping with supper and making sure Lincoln and Lissa bath. She didn't mind too much. Oh, hi, she adds, looking at Calla. You're Gold. She clears her throat. Sorry, I mean, you're Em's aunt, right? Yes. Calla smiles as she holds her hand out to shake Val's. It's good to meet you, Val, even though it isn't under the best of circumstances. Yeah, you're right about that. Val looks up. Come on, let's get moving. I follow her gaze to the stormy sky above. When I lower my eyes, she's pulling her hood up and over her head. Good idea, Calla says as we start walking. Em, remember the hood we added to the inside of your jacket? You should put that on. We don't need anyone recognizing you between here and the cemetery. Yeah, yeah. I reach back, tug the hood free, and pull it over my head. As I tuck a few stray strands of blue hair beneath the hood, Val says, Did I tell you your hair is totally awesome? I don't think so. Did I tell you I was born this way? What? She stops walking. Shut the front door. Are you serious? I am. All fairies are born like this. You know, like the gold in Calla's hair and the green in Dash's hair. Dash's hair? Val walks forward again, confusion pulling at her features. I've never seen any green in Dash's hair. Oh, huh. He must have been using a glamour all these years. We turn off the main road and head around the side of the high school so we can cut across the school field. We probably shouldn't go back to my house after this, Val says. In case someone saw you go there with me, they might be waiting for you there. Yes, I suppose it would be safer not to return. Do you think you'll ever be safe? Val asks. Or will you be running from people forever? Probably forever. Calla nods. Yes, well, unless we stage a dramatic scene in which everyone watching believes they've witnessed your death. I pause, waiting for her to laugh. But she doesn't. That's a joke, right? She glances sideways at me, smiling. Actually, no. She taps her forehead. The entire thing would be an illusion, obviously. I've done it once before. To save someone. I knew the guild would never stop hunting him if they believed him to be alive. Wow, Val says. That is one serious con. It was. We continue past the school wall and onto the field. If the right situation presented itself, I'd do the same thing for you, Em. The guild would stop looking for you if they thought you were dead. Yes, but wouldn't they want proof? Like a dead body? If you did an illusion of some sort and we escaped, then we'd leave nothing behind. No bodies. Surely they'd know it was a trick. And that's why it would have to be the right kind of situation. And how exactly... But I never get to ask how we would provide bodies for the right kind of situation, because racing toward me across the field is a stream of glass shards, and on the other side of the glass stands a woman. Ada. She's alive. Chapter 13. Run! I shove Val to the side, and though I didn't plan it, a burst of magic escapes my hand, propelling her a lot further than I intended. I don't have time to see if she lands okay, but I trust she'll perform an expert shoulder roll and be up and running within seconds. My gaze darts back to where Calla hurled a small fireball of magic to stop the glass racing toward us. I look at Ada and reach for my remaining griffin power. Your glass... Ada twists her hand, and something zooms through the air and slaps itself over my mouth. It's white and sticky, and though I claw at it, I can't remove the damn thing. I scratch more desperately at it, telling myself not to panic. And then I vanish completely. I stop struggling for a moment and look around. Calla's gone too, and so is Val, so this must be one of Calla's illusions.
How interesting. Ada calls to us as she walks over. This is a griffin ability, I assume. The power to make people invisible.
Don't make a sound, Calla whispers from somewhere nearby. I'll try to open a doorway and keep it invisible, though I'm not sure how I'll know it's actually there. As Ada moves closer, my thoughts race to catch up with what's happening. She's alive. That means Danny's alive, and that means there's still a chance I can separate Danny from the body she's forced to share with Ada. Also, how the heck did Ada find me here? Ah! Calla groans out loud at the same time horrendous pain shoots through my head. A moment later, we both become visible again. I know I should be worried about Ada and her glass and the thing stuck over my mouth, but I can't think of much beyond the pain. I press both hands against my forehead and bend over.
That doesn't feel so good, does it? Ada says. Hard to concentrate on your magic when you've got an ear-splitting headache.
The sound of splintering glass reaches my ears. I force my eyes to focus for long enough to see Ada's glass racing around us to form a circle. I don't see Val anywhere, which makes me hopeful she got away.
You like to enclose people in circles, Calla manages to say.
I do. Ada says. I guess I'm unimaginative that way. I rub my fingers against my temples and mumble against the white stuff.
Sorry, Em, I didn't quite catch that, Ada says, her tone taunting.
I imagine to raise my eyes enough to see her twisted smile before she adds, Danny says hi. I feel a sick lurch in the pit of my stomach. Despite the pain ricocheting through my head, I try to yell at her. But of course, I can only make muffled sounds. Calla breathes deeply before answering for me.
No, she doesn't. You're right. She doesn't. Ada replies. Her eyes return to mine. She's screaming at me to leave you alone. She's wailing, tormented and trapped, all because you decided to force the two of us back into one body. I grit my teeth as Calla says, Stop lying. Daniela lost her mind a very long time ago, and we all know that M had nothing to do with it. Oh, damn it! She presses one hand against her head. I wish I could believe Calla, but what if she's wrong? What if Danny has been perfectly sane ever since the changeling reversal spell, except now she's trapped and screaming inside the body she can no longer control? What if... Ugh, what if this damn headache splits my entire being in half? My body vanishes for a moment, then flickers in and out of view, before finally remaining visible as Calla groans beside me. Ada laughs. Can't handle the pain, huh? You guys are pathetic. What are you doing? Calla asks her. Do you like to play with your food before you eat it? The small part of me that can still pay attention to my surroundings notices Ada pacing slowly in front of her glass circle. Oh, I'm not going to eat you. Or, you know, kill you. I assume that's what she meant. Well, you I might kill, she says to Calla. I'm still trying to work out whether Rourke would appreciate it or not if I brought you back to him. But Em, I'm definitely not killing, unfortunately. Rourke specifically asked for her, and if I'm hoping for him to keep his side of our agreement, I'm going to have to bring her back alive. What agreement? Calla asks, leaning forward on her knees and breathing heavily. Let's see. How did that initial conversation go? Ada, I see you've got one hell of a powerful griffin ability there, killing people with glass, left, right, and center. How about you work for me? You can be part of my group of elite personal guards. Come to my aid whenever I call you. In return, I'll give you whatever you want. Ada swings her arm lazily back and forth, letting tiny glass shards sprinkle onto the ground at her feet. It sounded like a great offer. So what did I say? I want the guild brought down. Completely. That's always been my goal, and it remains my goal to this day. And he responded with... How interesting. That sounds like a goal that aligns perfectly with my own plans. And hey, wanna ruin some human lives too? To which I said, yeah. Ada pumps her fist, releasing a small spray of glass into the air. It rains down over her, seeming to have no effect on her whatsoever. Pretty simple agreement, she says. And no, it doesn't bother me that I'm telling you all about it. It's not as though you didn't already know my ultimate goal. I've always been after the guild. Guardians and their families are the ones I've been turning into glass since I began my little crusade. You're so full of yourself, Calla mutters. Yes, I am. And now I need to decide whether Calla throws both arms forward, magic flying from her fingers and words leaving her lips as a groan. A burst of flame shoots straight at Ada, and as she throws both hands up to form a shield, the splitting headache finally releases its hold on me. Thanks for monologuing, Calla says. I needed a bit of time to gather my strength. With the flames having vanished, Ada drops her shield and hurls magic forward without pause. Calla diverts the continuous assault of what appear to be glowing stones flying at us one after the other. Then, suddenly, we're invisible again. But Ada continues her attack, shouting, I know you're still inside my circle! I mumble incoherently, infuriated by the magical gag I still can't unstick from my face. Fine, then, Calla mutters as she continues fighting off Ada's magic. We'll go with something different. A grating snarl reaches my ears, and in the air behind Ada, a winged beast with curved, ridged horns and fangs protruding from its overly wide mouth appears. A gargoyle, I realize, as it hovers jerkily above Ada and grasps at her with its clawed hind legs. She ducks down, unaware that the gargoyle isn't real, and flings a handful of glass at it. She doesn't stop her attack on us, though, and glowing stones continue to fly from her other hand. I try again to pry the sticky white substance from my face, while Calla throws up a shield and keeps the gargoyle illusion going. Can you open a doorway? She says to me through gritted teeth. Quickly, I can't. Damn, this woman has stolen power from somewhere. Her magic's definitely stronger than it should be. She's going to... Ah! I can't hold this up much longer on my own! I reach with one hand inside my jacket, fumbling along the various weapons for my stylus. With my other hand, I direct a spark of magic at the white stuff, hope desperately that I'm not about to burn a hole into my face. Instead, I hear a sizzle as my magic eats into the sticky gag. Abandoning the stylus search for a moment, I tear at the substance again, ripping through it and finally managing to pull the horrible stuff off my face. And right then is when a dragon swoops down and hovers above us. Blue-green with the occasional shimmer of purple, along with giant red spikes running along part of her back and tail. I would have assumed it was part of Kala's illusion, if not for the girl sitting atop the dragon in a dress far dirtier than anything I've ever seen her wear. Aurora leans down and beckons. "What the... Where did you come from? I've been waiting for you!" she shouts. "Come on, I'll explain, but we should probably get out of here first." "Who are you?" Kala gasps as she throws all her effort into maintaining the shield and the gargoyle that Ada's still trying to fight off. "Rourke's sister," I hastily tell Kala. "She's the one who warned me about what Rourke was planning to do to me." "Sister? And you trust her?" "Yes, I think so." Wiping my sticky hands on my pants, I add, "You climb up first. I need to say something to stop." Imperia roars and sends a blazing inferno straight through Kala's shield. Ada abandons her offensive magic and throws up a shield of her own. "Or Imperia could just burn her to a crisp," Aurora says, a hint of pride in her voice. "Now hurry up," she adds, looking at us again. "No, a doorway will be better," Kala says, reaching into her jacket. I shake my head, then bend my knees, push against the ground with an extra spurt of magic, and leap free of the glass circle. "Em, I have to find Val," I tell her. "What?" "I need to make sure she's okay." "She's fine. She was running toward the school. I'm sure she's far away by now." "I have to, Kala," I call back to her, already moving away from the circle. "You said you understood." She groans loudly, as if trying to protect me is fast becoming the bane of her existence. "Fine," she shouts above the sound of Imperia's roaring flames. "I'll project something, an image of you climbing onto the dragon with me. We'll lead Ada away. Get Val to safety, and we'll meet you at her house. And if you're not there, I swear I'll be there," I shout, racing away and trusting Kala's ability to keep me hidden from Ada. I head for the wall surrounding the school staff's parking lot, my arms pumping back and forth and my feet slamming against the grass. I launch myself at the wall, momentum helping me to pull myself up. After swinging my legs over, I drop down on the other side, bending slightly before straightening and running forward. It's a maneuver I performed many times, usually with Val at my side. I take the same route now that we've always taken together. Past the squash courts, up the stairs outside the IT building, onto the railing, one foot on a windowsill, and finally up onto the ridge of the roof. We used to come up here to watch the rest of the town below us, and the main road into and out of Stanmead. Sitting together in one of the shallow window wells set into the roof, we talk about all the people wasting their lives in this dead-end town, and we dream of the day we could finally leave. For a moment, as I pull myself onto the highest point of the slightly sloped roof, I wonder why on earth I let my feet carry me up here. Val wouldn't hide in a place that's mostly exposed. She's probably inside a dark closet somewhere in the school, where neither Ada nor I will ever find her. But there she is, huddled in the same spot we've sat in so many times. "Val!" I call out to her as I pick my way across the roof ridge. "Val, I'm so relieved you're okay." I climb around the side of the window and onto the flat part in front of the glass. After lowering myself beside her, I wrap my arms around her shaking body. "It's okay. You're okay. I'm so, so sorry I brought this nightmare here, but you're okay." She shakes her head and sobs harder, which is highly disconcerting. I've only seen Val cry once or twice before. She's tough. She's a survivor. She is not a crier. She leans away from me, and it's then that I notice the glowing light leaking out between the fingers of her clenched fists. "Val," I say carefully, a silent warning already knocking at the edges of my mind. What are you holding? She shakes her head and stutters. I'm sorry. I reach for her hand and manage to loosen her fingers. She spreads them apart, like the petals of a flower opening to reveal a stone, a glowing stone. My breathing quickens. I swallow. Val, is this something magical? She nods and whispers, yes. Where did you get it? How long have you had it? She sniffs. About 5 years. Cold drenches my body. 5 years? Yes. At the back of my mind, I'm already beginning to guess the answer to the question I'm about to ask, but I have to ask it anyway. What does it do? It communicates with someone. With someone. I repeat, my words almost too quiet for me to hear. I remember returning to Chelsea's backyard with Dash a few weeks ago, after taking an unintended trip to the Shadow World with Rourke and Aurora. Not long after we got back, Ada appeared, and that was after Dash heard someone on the other side of the fence. I think of the glowing light I saw on Val's dresser drawer earlier, too bright to be a cell phone screen lighting up, and how Ada arrived here in Stanmead not long afterward. I remember what Ada herself said to me some time ago. I've always had someone watching you. Ada, I whisper. You were communicating with Ada. You told her I was here. Em, I am so, I pull away from her. I don't understand. How could you do that? I just told you everything. You know she tried to kill me and you still called her here? I didn't know she tried to kill you, Em. Val's eyes are wide, desperate. I used the stone before you got back to my house, before you explained everything to me. Why? I grab her shoulders and give her a good shake. Why the hell would you do that? How do you even know her? She pushes my hands away and shouts, I knew her before I knew you! What? She rubs the tears from her face and sniffs. Damn it! I never asked for any of this. Any of what, Val? She appeared out of the blue years ago, okay? She showed me things that should have been impossible. Magic things. And she told me about a new girl who just moved to town. A new girl who was like her. Magical. But this new girl didn't know she could do magical things, and she might never know she could do magical things, but this woman, Ada, told me I had to befriend you. She said I had to know everything that happened in your life so I could report it back to her when she came to check on things every month or so. She promised me that if I did this until you either moved away one day or until you managed to access your magic, then she would make sure my family would never want for anything else ever again. She said she'd fabricate some kind of inheritance and make it seem legit. I wouldn't need to ever worry about my brothers and sisters and my mom. I can't believe you'd say yes to someone like... Then she showed me what else her magic could do, how it could hurt and kill. And she asked if I would ever want anything like that to happen to my siblings or my mom. So what was I supposed to do, Em? Choose you, someone I'd never even met, over my own family? Of course not. No one would do that. You wouldn't have done that. Perhaps she's right, but I don't want to try to understand her position when I can barely see past the shocking revelation that the most important friendship I've ever had was based on a lie. I can't believe this, I whisper, staring past her. You've been spying on me throughout our entire friendship. This is why you weren't mad at me for leaving. I look at her. You should have been mad, Val. That's what I was expecting. We did everything together. We told each other everything. And then one day I ran away and didn't answer your calls or return your messages, and you should have been furious with me. That's how I would have felt if you'd abandoned me with no explanation. Em, but you weren't mad. You had your own guilt to deal with instead. Yes, I did. Doesn't it mean anything to you that I felt guilty about what I had to do? I don't answer her. I push myself to my feet. From among the many straps and pockets attached to the inside of my jacket, I finally find my stylus. Wait, Em, where are you going? Still, I say nothing as I bend and write on the roof. Em, I'm sorry. Don't you understand? I had to keep my family safe. What other choice did I have? She grabs my wrist, but I twist my arm out of her grip. It's difficult, with my mind so distracted and my emotions tugging me in every direction, but I manage to open a doorway to the ferry paths. Without looking back at Val, I climb hastily into the darkness. I have to remind myself to think of a destination. I remember at the last second that I'm supposed to meet Calla and Aurora back at Val's house. But before that thought, there was an image of the cemetery that flashed through my mind. Dull light materializes around me. I'm disoriented as I step back into the human world, unsure for a moment where I'll find myself. The cemetery. That's where the ferry paths brought me. I take a few steps forward, my stylus still clutched in my hand. I try to shove Val and her betrayal from my mind and replace her with an image of Chelsea and Georgia. I wanted to say goodbye to them, so I may as well do it now that I'm here. As rain begins to patter lightly onto my head, I scan the dozens of headstones around me. I don't know where to begin looking for them. I have no idea which section they've been buried in. I squeeze my eyes shut. Go away, Val. Go away. Val. Go away, Val. And though I know they can't hear me, I mutter, goodbye, Chelsea. Goodbye, Georgia. I'm sorry for... I'm sorry for leading Ada here. The same Ada who threatened Val's family. The same Ada who definitely would have followed through on her threats if Val had disobeyed her. I squeeze my hand around the stylus and let out a wordless cry. I'm supposed to be here for Chelsea and Georgia, but my mind can't focus on them. They're gone. But Val. Val is still alive. Val is my best friend. Val is sitting alone on a rooftop, hating herself for the very thing I've spent my whole life focused on. Looking out for the person I love most. I clench my jaw. Damn it, I hiss, raising the stylus. I turn, looking for something to write on, and see the pillar on one side of the cemetery gate. I hurry to it and raise my stylus. Moments later, a doorway yawns before me. I walk into the darkness, picturing the school roof. On the other side, as I step carefully onto the ridge of the roof, with one arm reaching back to keep the doorway open, Val is still there. She's standing now, her arms wrapped tightly around her body as rain runs down her body. "Em," she cries out when she sees me. You came back. I want to be mad at you. I do. I am mad at you, damn it. I suck in a breath between my teeth, willing myself not to cry. But I know that I would have done the same thing if I'd been in your position. I would have done anything for my mother. And if someone came along 5 years ago and offered me everything we could ever possibly need in exchange for befriending you and reporting information about you, I would have said yes. And then, after we became friends, I shake my head and sniff. I don't know, Val. I like to think I would have refused at some point. I like to think our friendship would have meant too much for me to continue going behind your back like that. But I don't know. I probably would have kept lying to you, because no one ever meant as much to me as my own mother. I bite my bottom lip to keep it from wobbling, but my voice is a whisper now, barely audible above the pattering of rain on the school roof. And then, she turned out to be the biggest liar of them all. Em, I'm so, so sorry. Val moves, as if to climb around the window toward me, but she stops when I hold my hand up. I know. I swallow. And I just wanted to say that I understand. With that, I turn and walk back into the darkness. Chapter 14. There you are, Calla says the moment I show up on the pavement in front of Val's house. Imperia's wing sweeps past the edge of my vision, and I realize as I look up that she's hovering just above the houses with Aurora on her back. Where's Val? Calla asks. She's the one who called Ada. Calla pulls her head back. What? She's fine, let's go. I look up again, my gaze focusing on the section of Imperia's back behind Aurora. Are we using fairy paths to get up there? Em, what do you... Let's just go, okay? I'm sorry. I thought I could trust Val, but apparently Ada got to her years ago, before she and I were even friends. So, you know, I can't really blame her. And I don't want to talk about it. I spin around. Where is Ada anyway? Calla looks beyond me, her eyes focusing somewhere in the distance. Ada and her glass weapons are following my illusion to the edge of town. I can't project the illusion much further, though, so it'll soon disappear, and she'll realize we've tricked her. So if you're sure you're ready to go, then I'm ready. We can leave on our own, Calla adds, her voice lower now. Looking down, I see that her stylus is already gripped in her hand. We don't need to go with this unseelie princess. You and I are safer on our own, and we have things to deal with that she doesn't need to be involved in. I catch Kala's hand before she can write a doorway spell. Aurora said she was waiting here for me. I don't want to just leave without... What if she was waiting here to take you back to the Unseelies? Calla hisses in a frustrated whisper. You've already had one friend show you this evening that she can't be trusted. What if Aurora can't be trusted either? Her words sting, but I can't deny them, especially since Aurora's lied to me before. She gave me a nonsense story about being a witch slave and tried to get me to run away from Chevalier House with her. But that was before I shared a home with her. That was before we became friends. Would she really try to trick me again now? Hey! Aurora shouts down to us. What's that at the end of the street? I twist around and see a figure at the other end of the road stepping out of the fairy paths. Glittering glass shards race ahead of her, splitting the road into chunks of tar as they go. Crap, 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 I mutter. Of course Ada would come here to look for me. She saw us with Val on the field, and she knows exactly where Val lives. Calla wraps her hand around mine. I'm opening a door. Grab on to Imperia! Aurora shouts, just as the dragon's tail slams into me, knocking the breath from my lungs and sweeping me off my feet. I gasp for air and cling tightly to the slippery scales, one arm wrapped beneath Imperia's tail and the other wedged between two reddish-pink spikes. It's more than a little awkward, and I wonder how long I can hang on before the sweeping motion of her tail causes me to lose my grip. Use the spikes to climb up! Aurora shouts as Imperia's wings beat the air, and the ground recedes beneath us. Just... Oh, crap! Watch out! Imperia swerves to the side to avoid a spray of glass pieces shooting directly into the air. Her tail swings around, causing me to shriek and shut my eyes, and hope I'm not about to plummet to my death. Try to climb up now! Calla shouts above the sound of wind and rain rushing past us. I open my eyes and twist my head to the side until I can see her. She doesn't look nearly as terrified as I feel. Then again, she's probably used to doing crazy life-threatening things like hanging onto dragon tails. If you fall, I'll catch you with magic, she adds. Go on, get to the saddle. Okay, I answer, the words sounding more like a breathless grunt. As I wrap my hands around spike after spike, dragging myself along the side of Imperia's tail and upper back, I'm thankful for every wall I've ever pulled myself up. Looking back, I see Calla following me. Finally, with rain stinging my skin and a cold wind tearing at my hair, I manage to pull myself onto the top of Imperia's back. I cling to the raised edge of the saddle Aurora's sitting in, shut my eyes, and breathe out. Exhilaration battles its way through my fear as we soar through the sky, leaving Stanmead, Val, and Ada far behind. When Imperia's flown a good distance away from Stanmead, she circles around and lands on an open field. I expect we're about to climb down, but instead, I watch as Aurora's stylus leaves her hand and flies through the air on its own. I wonder how her magic will flow out of her and into the stylus, until I notice the glowing thread of magic linking the stylus to her hand. She speaks the spell, and after waiting a little longer than we normally would, an extra-large doorway to the fairy paths opens. I'm directing, Aurora says, as she flicks her hand and her stylus shoots back toward her, so don't think of anything. Imperia lumbers forward into the darkness. I cling more tightly to the back of the saddle and try to think only of the blackness that surrounds us. Slowly, an opening materializes up ahead, and Imperia carries us into a misty valley, bathed in a pinky purple hue. Hills and mountains surround us, and the faintest hint of magic drifts across my skin on the breeze. "Nobody will find us here," Aurora says. She removes the strap securing her to the saddle and slides down Imperia's side. She lands on the dragon's bent knee, then jumps to the ground. I wipe the moisture from my face and follow her, despite the fact that I sense Cal is about to say something. The moment my feet strike the ground, Aurora rushes at me and swings her arms around my shoulders. "I'm so glad you're okay." Then she steps back, her smile vanishing. "You idiot!" I blink, confused by her rapid shift in mood. "Excuse me? You were supposed to come to me for help, not run off on your own and wind up with half the palace guards chasing after you." My eyebrows rise a little higher. "Oh, is that what I was supposed to do? Because you didn't exactly give me instructions. In fact, you couldn't have been more cryptic if you'd tried." "I wrote out the translation for the whole spell," she exclaims, throwing her hands up as Callus strides past us and stops a few paces away, making intricate movements in the air with her fingers. "It explained exactly what Rourke was planning to do." "True, but..." I trail off for a moment, distracted by Calla digging in the backpack. She's been so insistent that we head off on our own, but it seems she's given up on that idea for now. She removes the mirror from her backpack and holds it up. I turn back to Aurora, trying to remember what I was saying. But you didn't tell me about Rourke's plan. You didn't even write a proper note and give it to me. You handed me a pile of books and expected me to open the right one and turn to the right page. That was a serious shot in the dark. I almost missed it. I definitely would have missed it if it hadn't been for the tiny corner of your "I swear I didn't know about this" note that was sticking out. "It wasn't supposed to be a tiny corner," she answers, frowning at me as if this is my fault. "There was supposed to be at least an inch of that note sticking out." I roll my eyes. Aside from the fact I might have never seen the note, I still didn't know if I could trust you after that. It might have been some kind of test, another game you and Rourke were playing with me. Her purple eyes widen. "Are you kidding? A game? Do you know what I risked in order to give you that information? My life, Em. Rourke wanted to kill me when he found out what I'd done. He..." "Really?" "Yes, really. Holy flip, Em. I had no idea what he was planning to do with your magic. Oh, and the whole Clarina thing. What the hell? A spy in my service, and I had no idea." She's pacing by now, literally spitting angry sparks of magic. "So, I ran for my life straight to Imperia's enclosure and got both of us out of there." I fold my arms across my chest. "But when Rourke caught up to me by the portal in his room, he seemed confused that I knew all about his plan. He couldn't have known that you told me." "Well, of course he didn't know then. He hadn't had time yet to figure it out. He'd only just discovered that you were missing and had freed two of his prisoners. It was only after that, after you got away through the shadow world, that he put the pieces together. And he didn't have proof, of course. But I was unprepared when he confronted me, and I guess I'm not as good a liar as he is."
"I don't know about that," I mutter. "You seemed pretty convincing when I first met you."
Aurora stops pacing and looks at me. Mist shifts lazily around her as her angry expression softens. "Please believe me, Em. I know I lied to you in the beginning, back at Chevalier House, but that was just to get you on our side. Ever since then, I've only ever told you what I believed to be the truth. I had no idea my own brother was lying to me. I didn't know he made a secret agreement with that glass woman. I didn't know he locked Dash away in our prison. In fact, I never would have suspected a thing if you hadn't mentioned some of the vows you were memorizing."
"The vows?"
"But you weren't supposed to know." A memory of Aurora asking me how my pronunciation practice was going comes suddenly to mind. "Oh, yes. I did tell you some of the words." She nods. "They were supposed to be words from the old fairy language, but they most certainly were not. I recognize them from, well, from long ago, from the witch. That in itself would have been suspicious enough, but the actual words you told me, something about giving up your magic..." She shivers. "I had to check it out.
I had to look for the spell, which is why I said we needed to go to the library after that. And then Rourke was there when I finally found the right spell. I was too damn terrified to say anything about it. And the next day, even if we'd had a moment alone, I wouldn't have dared say anything. I know Rourke and my father can hear what's going on in most of the rooms if they choose to listen. The only thing I could think of was writing a note and giving you the book itself. And I'm sorry the note was so... She waves her hand as she searches for the right words. Lacking in instructions and additional information? I ask. Yes, it took me a while to translate the whole spell. I wanted to be sure of what it all meant, and I had to keep hiding what I was doing. I was so flustered. By the time I'd finished the translation, I just wanted to get the book out of my hands and into yours. I assume you didn't even let your handmaid see what you were doing. If Clarina had figured out you were translating Rourke's spell, she would have gone straight to him. Clarina? Ugh. Aurora clenches her fists and begins pacing again. That conniving little snake. How did you find out about her? Aurora lets out a dramatic sigh. So let me fill you in on everything that went down after you ran away. I glance at Calla again, now deep in conversation with Chase via the mirror. Okay, I say, returning my attention to Aurora. Then I let the last remaining bit of my griffin power leak into my voice and say the thing I should have said the moment we got here. Don't lie to me. Aurora opens her mouth, then blinks, clearly taking a few seconds to realize what I've done. Then, you just commanded me. You used your power on me. I give her a half-smile laced with guilt. Don't be mad. You know I had to. I have to be sure you're not trying to trick me again. She glares at me for another few moments before sighing. I suppose I understand. And in case you were wondering, she adds, nothing I've said so far was a lie. Good to know. So, can I carry on now? I nod and lean back against Imperia's side, crossing my arms over my chest. Okay, so, Rourke returned from the Shadow World late that night. He told us, Mom and Dad and me, that it was that woman with the glass griffin ability who'd found him in the Shadow World and freed him from the bonds he'd been tied up with. Aurora frowns, looking past me. It sounded as though he'd been working with her for a while, like they had some kind of prearranged way for him to signal her to come to his aid. He didn't go into detail about it, though, so I couldn't tell if Dad already knew about that arrangement. Anyway, Rourke said he'd sent her to look for you and not to return to his side until she had you. So that's how she found the Shadow World, I say. She told me she accidentally discovered it the same way you and Rourke did, which seemed like a weird coincidence to me, but it must have been Rourke who showed her that world. And I guess it wasn't too hard for her to find me after Rourke told her too. She probably searched the castle first. And that's where I was. Wait, you were still there? Why didn't you get out? And if she found you, then how come you're... I hold up my hand to silence her questions. How about you finish your story first? She lowers her shoulders. Fine. Okay, so Dad and Rourke went off together to have a private meeting that apparently Mom and I didn't need to be a part of, presumably so Rourke could tell Dad more lies, and Dad would never know that Rourke was planning to, like, ruin the whole human world. I was kind of freaking out, wondering if I'd wake up to find you being dragged back into our palace. And I was also terrified Rourke would discover I was the one who tipped you off about the spell. The next morning, he summoned me to his room and told me to bring Clarina with me. I thought perhaps he just wanted to question her about you, since she'd been serving you for the duration of your stay with us. But then I got to his room, and the very first thing he said to me was, "So you went sneaking around behind my back, discovered I planned to take Emerson's magic and told her all about it?" I was too shocked to say anything for a few moments, and I'm sure the truth must have been obvious on my face. I didn't even get to deny it before he carried on, saying that he wasn't the only one keeping secrets from me, that Clarina had a secret too, and now was the time to share it. And then she walked over to his side, and he put his arm around her. Aurora stares at me with wide eyes. I swear, a sprite could have knocked me over. I was so shocked. Did he explain what that was all about? The only thing he said to me was something about her being a spine of noble birth. Rourke didn't seem interested in sharing the story, but Clarina obviously wanted to tell me. Aurora walks over to Imperia and sits on her bent knee before continuing. Several years ago, Rourke was pledged to marry someone, a girl from a noble family, far away. It was part of some kind of agreement that was obviously beneficial to both parties. But then someone broke the alliance. I never did find out if it was my father or the other family. Anyway, that ended the engagement, but Rourke had already met this girl and fallen for her. Not that I can imagine him ever falling for anyone, she adds, rolling her eyes. And this girl, Clarina, loved him too. I'll bet the idea of possibly being queen one day didn't hurt either, I mutter. I'm sure, and Rourke wanted to be king, but didn't want to wait centuries for Dad to give up the throne or die, so Rourke and Clarina decided she would come to the palace. Nobody knew her there, so she could easily masquerade as the princess's handmaid and learn whatever she could from the royal family members. Eventually, she and Rourke would figure out a way to rule together. And then you guys discovered the Shadow World, and Rourke obviously thought that was the perfect opportunity. Yes, but what I couldn't figure out when they were telling me this was why they'd kept it secret from me. I knew about Rourke's plan to make the Shadow World his behind our father's back. He trusted me with that information. So why didn't he tell me about Clarina as well? So I asked him, and he said, she trails off as she looks away, her eyes focusing on distant hazy mountains. What did he say? He said, you've never been my real sister. The hurt is evident in her voice. Rora, I say gently, though I have no idea what to add that might possibly comfort her. He reminded me that it was a witch who left me at the palace years ago, that I might be part of some elaborate long-term plan for a witch to gain access to the Unseelie Crown, which is completely ludicrous, and I told him that, but clearly that didn't matter to him, because at that moment he told his men to seize me and get rid of me. Jeez, I murmur. How did you escape? It's a long way from your room to the dragon enclosure. Nuraya was there too, Aurora says, referring to her other handmaid. So she helped me. She struck someone with her magic, which clearly no one expected, so we were both able to get out of the room. Then we used the hidden passages within the walls. I know them well. I'd played in them for hours when I was a child. I knew if I could just get to my father, he'd protect me. I could tell him everything Rourke was planning, and he'd make sure my brother never got his hands on me. But Rourke knows the passages, too. He cut me off, and I couldn't get to Dad, and Nuraya and I ended up separated. I found myself near the kitchen, and I knew my only escape would be to get outside to the dragon enclosures, and Nuraya... She brushes one hand over her face. I don't know what happened to her. I know I'm the most awful person in the world for not going back to look for her, but I couldn't. Rourke's men would have caught me, and in those dark passages... She shakes her head. No one would have known what happened. They could have hidden my body, pretended I ran away or something, so I left Nuraya. I ran all the way to the dragon enclosure and flew away on Imperia. I wrap my arms more tightly around myself as I start to shiver in my wet clothing. Maybe she got away. She's been working at the palace for a long time, hasn't she? She must have friends there. Maybe one of the guards or carriage drivers smuggled her out. Maybe, Aurora says quietly, though she doesn't sound convinced. Not too far from us, Calla says goodbye to Chase and walks toward us. Behind her, the mirror remains suspended in the air, its glossy surface having returned to normal. Forgive me, she says to Aurora, but I'm still not sure we can trust you. We can, I say to Calla. I'm sure this time. I told her not to lie. You know, with my griffin ability. Calla looks between the two of us, nodding slowly. Okay, good. Well done. But it's probably still best if we go our separate ways, she says to Aurora. Em and I have things to take care of, and you... No, no, no! Aurora looks horrified. Please, you don't understand. I have no one. I can't go back home because even though Rourke's left the palace, I know he has other spies there. Spies who could make me disappear when no one's looking. And my father would protect me, but he isn't always there, especially now with all